our country has gotten to where we've really got to get a grip, man. We've got to right this ship, you know. So it is what it is. But I want to talk about one other thing. Let's transition a little bit. Uh-oh. How long do you think it will be before we see a catastrophic event that could potentially change the trajectory and course of American history again, on American soil, like a terrorist event due to our open borders policy, where we've allowed, you know, some estimates 10 million, some estimates 15 million illegal undocumented individuals from multiple different countries coming into our country? How long do you think it's going to be?
Well, not long, because we've already had an arrest right here in Houston, Texas. Yep. of an actual known terrorist.
Yeah.
Who had actually assassination attempts.
Yeah.
And was working on coordination with other actors, right? That's already happened. We've already had gangs take over an apartment complex on U.S. soil in one of our states. It's the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
It's going to be. The thing that is interesting and is that I do see, and this is where that divide and where it gets really dangerous, there seems to be a different temperament with some of the people who aren't willing to put up with that, like people who are willing to get in a truck and drive or get on a motorcycle
to
and
Colorado.
Drive to Colorado, yeah. Right?
Not the ones that you want to mess with.
And go fix it themselves. Right?
That's what I'm afraid of in this country, man, is that the people are going to get to a point where we're pissed off and we just start fighting back.
Yeah. Well, and let's say that in the situation of Colorado that they were right, but that, you know, one of these illegal immigrants, gang members gets killed by an American citizen defending American soil in that state, in that city.
They're going to jail.
They're going to go to jail,
mm-hmm.
possibly for life.
Yeah.
Because that's what that city thinks is right. And that's the scariest part, right? Is that there's 12 citizens in that city who are witnessing that happen. And when somebody took action, they're going to hold the mm-hmm. person who took action accountable,
yeah.
but they won't hold the people who are doing the wrong accountable.
Yeah.
That's what's messed up. How did we get there?
I'm concerned, man. I am really concerned. I was pulling some stats the other day, and since August of last year, September, this time last year, a year, FBI has raised the alarm 5 times. We're at a critical point right now, right? For a terrorist attack or something of significance.
So I don't know if you follow it at all, but if you follow history, right? The commander of the People's Army of Afghanistan, right? Tried prior to 9/11 to warn the United States.
Yes.
Over and over and over again that this was going to happen. And he reached out through diplomatic channels all across the world,
yep.
to try to get there. And he was completely put off. And
he was eventually murdered.
The day before 9/11.
He was killed.
He was killed.
Yep.
And the terrorists felt confident to take over and took out 9/11. Fast forward, his son,
yep.
is now taken over as the commander,
mm-hmm.
because he, in formal education,
yeah.
extremely smart, speaks fantastic English. He took over because he felt the passion of his dad, not because he was just, you know, thrust into this and they truly cared about his country. And he is trying to warn the United States. They physically won't let him in the country.
Yeah.
Won't take his phone calls. And it is literally history repeating itself.
Yeah.
And it's going to come out again.
Sean Ryan just interviewed him.
He did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's scarier than anything, that he has actionable intel and our agencies don't want to listen to it.
They're sounding the alarm five times. What we know is that since last year, the reports and the statistics that I read, we have apprehended at least 90 known terrorists and have released them back.
Where?
Into the United States.
So we arrested them?
We arrested, processed them, and released them.
But why?
I don't know.
We could send them back if we didn't want to.
Let me correct that. Correct that. We arrested them and returned them, 90. Over 400 we know that have entered. We don't know their whereabouts. Let me correct that. Over 400 known ISIS terrorist affiliates have entered the United States through the southern border.
And we don't know where they're more at. Funded than ever. So we're writing wet checks of like 40, the estimates are between 40 and 80 million a week is what's going to Taliban right now, a week. And we don't have the money to pay our own bills.
How does this even work?
How is this possible, man? We left $800 million worth of military equipment behind. How did that get put on parade now?
Not only on parade, it's being sold all over the world. Man, it's
for cash. In addition to us paying them $80 million a week. But we can't get mental health professionals for our kids in school.
Because it doesn't make money.
$80 million a week.
I know. It doesn't make money.
Imagine what we could do just in Texas with $80 million.
But yet people are still supporting this administration. Listen, it's not about this administration because the past administrations, I mean, they've all been, this has been going on, you know. Why? No one's talking about how we're $35 trillion in debt.
How do you get out of it?
You can't get out of that.
Well, so I know you're an Obama fan.
No,
I'm not his policies, the person.
I like him as a person. I'm not a fan of his policies. Let me be clear with that.
The one thing that sticks out of his presidency, there's a lot, but for me, was the plane full of cash.
Going back to Iran
yeah. In the final days, hours of his presidency. I have to say, as an American patriot, if I was on that plane as a military service member,
oh, yeah. It would have never made its destination.
I don't think that plane full of cash would have made it there. I really don't. No. I think there would have been a door open and that would have been pushed out. Like, I don't think that it would have made it.
Dude,
I think that you want to talk about going AWOL. You want to talk about going out there. If there was ever a reason, right? Sending in a plane full of U.S. dollars, cash.
What was that dollar amount? Was it like $6 billion or something? It was a lot.
It doesn't matter, Mike. It doesn't even matter the amount of money. These are literally people who openly hate Americans, and we flew a plane full of cash to them. It doesn't make any sense.
But why are the American people so adamant about supporting, whether it be this administration or past administrations,
knowing this stuff doesn't matter the party at all.
I'm not saying Republican or Democrat because all hands are dirty.
Every one of them.
All of their hands are dirty. Why is it? And this, well, it's not a why. This goes back to what I said. This is manipulation at the highest levels.
How did our elected officials not have a hand in flying a plane full of money to an adversary? Like, how did that go down? And how has nobody talked about this, 8 years later?
Yeah.
8 years later, and nobody once has ever questioned how the plane got money? How?
How is it that we're
but
still-
But this person is funding terror against us and-
Clearly state, and our allies, Israel.
Absolutely.
Right?
How does that happen?
How is it that we continue to just fund the Ukraine?
Blindly fund.
I read a report that said that the money that we've sent the Ukraine could have built a house for every homeless person in the United States. Why is this not a conversation amongst dinner tables? Why is this you know, this is not a Republican issue. This is not a Democratic issue. This is an American issue that we should all seriously be considering
the other thing that's
having conversations about on both sides.
The other thing that's really crazy is how America is footing the bill. How NATO and all the other people have not ponied up their
contributed
money.
Anything.
Yeah, and they haven't paid their fair share.
How does the Ukraine... I want somebody to answer honestly... me, because I've never been able to get an honest answer. How does us continuing to fund this war in the Ukraine against Russia, how does this benefit America?
I can tell you 100%.
Well, I know it's weapons, it's arms, it's the greatest.
Right, if you listen back into what was it, Mitch McConnell, who was recorded early on and saying, you don't understand, this is money is not going to Ukraine. It's going to American defense contractors.
Yeah,
right. And it was one private of the biggest
defense slip-o. Contractors. Yeah. Private defense contractors. And it's not going back to the American people.
The whole reason why you want to get another country in NATO is that they then have to conform all of their military
weapons NATO,
directly
AR-15s.
To rounds and technology that's made here. It is the biggest manipulation ever.
But it's not benefiting Americans as a whole. It's benefiting defense contractors, private companies. It's not benefiting Americans.
Who are also held by private equity firms who then are also jiggling the handle, creating the division, which creates more war, which creates more money.
Well, let's go back to the agreement. You know, people want to, and listen, I'm not, for the record, I am not saying Vladimir Putin's a good guy at all. I want to make that abundantly clear because someone will probably take that later on and say, well, Mike said this. Bullshit. I didn't say that. What I'm telling you is that we have a hard time keeping our word. You know, during the Reagan-Gorbachev administration, when we tore down the wall in East Berlin, we made the promise that NATO would not move one inch to the east. And then we start, you know, imposing our will in the Ukraine, talk about bringing them on. And Russia, you know, they have a right to defend themselves as well. And I'm not saying that they're right, but they have a right to defend themselves. But we have an obligation to keep our freaking word, you know?
Well, it also goes back to who is the leader of the country and do they feel that there is somebody that is going to fight back? Or is just going to eat his ice cream, right? And when there's weakness.
And cash those Burisma checks.
Yeah. When there's weakness, right? Adversaries will exploit it.
Yeah, no, it's I blame the American people for the status in which we're in now. But the question is, I have this conversation with people all the time. I say, I blame us. I blame us because we have not held accountable those that we elect.
Well,
you know, but at the end of the day, what can we do? What can we really do?
I think that you want to talk about a catastrophic, right? And it's one of those things that, you know, the thing that should scare everyone is the nuclear weapons of today, right?
Oh, yeah.
And there's more talk today about nuclear from leaders around the world
than ever before.
So, little known fact, and a lot of people don't know this. Right? The nuclear warheads that exist today, right? To put it into perspective, the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima is infantile.
It's the ignition source of the new bomb.
Correct. They need to activate that bomb in order to activate the warhead of today.
Yeah.
So it's thousands and thousands of times greater.
Yeah.
And the fact that they run around, they as in leaders of the world, talking about nuclear bombs is you're talking about the end of civilization.
You know what humanity. Peace that brings me is just knowing that I'll be done. Just vaporize, you know, no emotion to it, no feeling. You just vaporize. You know, God forbid we ever get to that point. God, I hope we don't. But I tell you, the future is not looking very bright, brother.
Why does any organization? And what's crazy about it is we have now, clearly, we've found from Russia that not all nations agreed to that, but there was a kind of a dividing line in there that chemical weapons were kind of, you know, off limits, right? That we were all going to get rid of that because it involved people who weren't involved in the war, right? Yeah. You couldn't control it. So now kids and women and children and everybody else, innocent people were now affected by those types of things. And so it was one of those like things that everybody spoke about and they went away for the most part, right? But still we have these things that can end humanity.
Civilization, yeah.
Yeah, as a whole.
I don't know, Mike. It's...
And what's scary is on November 5th, we have to pick a party, either one. Somehow, people are more worried about a women's rights, which bathroom to use, these types of things.
Are there really 18 different genders?
Right.
No, or, there's not. There's two.
Or how are we going to handle the world's landscape and survive as humanity? Yeah. Right. That's the primary focus. Take all of the other divisions off all the other party lines, everything off the table.
And I can tell you,
we have to look at that.
You know, and I said it in this podcast is that I'm not voting for the individual anymore. I'm voting for sustainability of America. What does that look like? Does the right have it all worked out? No, but I can at least align with the basic premise of the policies that Donald Trump would have versus the opposition do we really want to get into this conversation?
Yeah. But you want to talk just, about where we're in rough shape, the open borders and you know, to really put it out there, we're kind of in the epicenter. We are the closest major market, major city to the open border.
Yeah.
Like we are target number one, arguably third, fourth largest city in the United States. We are the single one that's closest to the border.
Yeah, we feel it, man. We see it, you know.
But the good thing is that we have all of our critical infrastructure locked down on tight. All of our refineries are super secure.
Yeah.
Our nuclear power plants are super secure. Like all of these things we have covered. We have nothing to worry about. Our power grid is phenomenal. We have no problems there. And so if any terrorist attack happens here, we're good. We're on lockdown.
Okay. Yeah. I love your facetiousness.
You know, I will tell you this, like, I don't think it's a conspiracy theory. I think that I have conversations today with more people than I've ever had in my life of people that are gathering supplies of some sort, whether that's
ammunition,
or it could be as simple as a solar system, right? Some type of battery, some type of food, some type of water source, something like that. Those conversations, I feel like, are happening at a much different level than I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, people around us specifically and that are a little bit more aware of what's going on in the world, protect ourselves a little bit differently. We prepare and plan a little bit differently when we leave our homes. I definitely see that. And I see that continuing to ramp up, right? That this is more than just a talking point, this is a feeling that a lot of Americans are feeling.
I can tell you, and I think we mentioned this last time. I don't know if it was on the last podcast, but we both have a friend who's what I will say is a very good person, but on the opposite end of probably our political spectrum, who lives in a northeastern state, that contacted me and said, man, I'm really concerned. One way or another, good, bad, indifferent, I'm concerned. I've never owned a firearm. I've never shot a firearm. I want to learn, but I only trust you to teach me. Can I fly down and you take me? And I said, absolutely. I mean, I was honored. And he did a very good job. And I think I made a believer out of him, that it's one, it's not as difficult as one would think. And there's, you know, basics to everything, you know, and he did a very good job. And you know, he's protecting himself now.
So, you know, follow up. I mean, I remember all this happened and he kind of selected which he felt comfortable with. Has he, when he left, did he do anything about it? Do you know? Was there any follow up?
He took the gun home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, he, he has my gun.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Right. Yeah, no, he, oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, he took action.
All right. Yeah. Just follow up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, living in Texas, it's one of those things that, we grew up different, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, whether it's hunting and fishing and just being outdoors and all of the things, it's part of that. And, I can't tell you how many times people have come here to our office and they have all these questions, right? And so, I've had, just like you have, I've had the opportunity to take people to shoot their first gun ever, right? And they come from nations where you're not allowed or it's taboo or it's whatever if you have to go through this. And, you know, I took some people from another country that came here. I took them shooting sporting clays, and they were, you know, and they're like super interested, but like, I don't know. My wife will be mad at me.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like, well, you're how many hours away is your wife? Yeah. Like, yeah, let me come back in here.
Yeah.
And so after they see how it is and then they get in there and they understand and then saw the sporting side of it and sporting clays. Every time, you know, they got through a box of shells and was like, this is amazing. Like, I totally understand why you're there. Yeah. We learned safety. We taught them everything, how to respect the gun and everything else. But, you know, going through that, it's different whenever people have that ideology around a firearm, right?
Well, you know, Austin. Mm-hmm. So Austin's a young man who I've grown very fond of. I treat him like my own kid. I've been mentoring him since he was a junior in high school, and he's now a graduate of Sam Houston State.
Crazy.
And great family. You know, he's wanting to get into some of the things that I've done, and I think he's going to be better than me. You know, one of the things that he's doing right now is he's doing his little pilgrimage. Because, you know, I encouraged him. I think his parents encouraged him. He's talked to a couple different agencies, and he's young. He's 21, and he needs a little bit of life experience. And so kid did a very good job. He saved his money. He had a small business of his own, pressure washing. Saved up a lot of money over the last couple of years. And one of the things that he's done is he left about a month and a half ago and went to Europe. And he's hitting, I want to say it was like 28 countries in about 3.5 months.
Given what he's doing, I hope he keeps detailed records.
He does.
He's going to have to fill that out for the rest of his life.
He does.
Everywhere he went and what time.
Yeah, we talked about that. And so he's met this little young lady.
Uh-oh.
In Germany.
In Germany.
And I talked to him the other day and, you know, he's pretty serious, you know, about this girl. Well, she's booked a flight here over the holidays. And so he says, hey, do you think we can take her, you know, to the ranch? And you can't own weapons there. She wants to shoot a gun. I was like, yeah, but you know, the weapons we have at the ranch, I mean,
they're not just a weapon.
No, there's, I mean, we have everything.
Everything, yeah.
Right? And so... I told him, I was like, well, we're going to have to do crawl, walk, run,
you know, like this one's so, not gonna be.
But, he's like, man, she's really looking forward to it. You know, it's just so weird. Like she's so scared, you know, to shoot this gun. And so I was like, she'll be in good hands. I mean, we'll do it right.
Listen, you know? This is one of those things that we talk about all the time, you know, about the weapon, right? Whatever it is. And, you know, people talking about should you have an AR-15 or even be able to own one or anything else. And being a hunter, getting your kids into a stand.
Yeah.
I would say anybody who's ever done that would be hard pressed to find an easier platform for someone to shoot their first deer off, right? Where they're not coming back with a scope mark. Yeah,
than
right?
an AR-15?
Yeah.
It's the being the able villain.
To suppress it, right? Yeah. So that you don't have the concussion and the sound and all of the things for a young hunter coming up. Now, could you use that as a migration to a rifle? Yeah. Absolutely. But if you don't handle that very first time right, mm-hmm. you can ruin it for the rest of the time, yeah. right? And so...
Well, you know, my philosophy, how I do it, even with my kids, and yes, you can say what you want, judge me all you want. I started my kids shooting guns when they were... I bought them their first rifle at 5 years old. You know, Marlin Papoose, breakdown barrel, you know, small rifle, 22. And when they turned 12, I bought them a pistol, 22, again, Smith & Wesson, M&P. And I bought them the 22 because they needed to understand the fundamentals of marksmanship, right? The mechanics of the weapon, the nomenclature yep. of the gun, the fundamentals of marksmanship. And, you know, it's like... You have to get those basics down first. You have to understand how the gun functions, the nomenclature of it, how to correctly rectify a jam, go through your sports drills. But more importantly than that is that the fundamentals of marksmanship are easier to teach when you have a weapon that's easier to handle.
Yeah.
And so with a 22 long range, you don't have the recoil mm-hmm. that you would have for a 9mm or a 45. I tell you, one of the things that I like to do to pass the time, I know I'm boring, but I go to gun stores, you know, and I will go look, and then I sit and I kind of observe, right? And I'll watch these men come into these gun stores with their wife or their girlfriend or whatnot, even go into a firing range, and I've watched this stuff. Where these guys are coming in and they're trying to get these women who are already timid to, you know, get a semi-automatic Sig Sauer 45 caliber. And it's like, whoa, wait a second.
Yeah.
You know, that's
way too much.
Dude, if you're trying, especially if you right truly have intentions of trying to teach and inform
that's not
this it. Person, that is not what you need to do. And I've seen guys get, you know, completely belligerent mm-hmm. with the wife or spouse or whatever, because the you know they're telling them, and it's like observation. She's telling you non-verbally she's not comfortable with this, dude. Yeah. It's too big. It doesn't fit right. And so,
and that's one of those luxuries we have in Texas, right? Is I wouldn't take anybody if I didn't have to a shooting range, right?
Yeah, take them to the woods.
Totally different experience when you're out in the woods. Like it's a totally.
Yeah.
Totally different thing at the ranch than you don't know who you're around and what they're doing. And, you know, when you look at the guy next to you and he's holding the gun upside down, shooting at targets, like that's not where you want to be. I don't even want to be there.
You know, I took, this is a great story. I took, Rosie Stone,
mm-hmm.
Chris Stone's mother. Chris was murdered in, Santa Fe High School. You would think that she would be anti-gun. She's not. She doesn't blame the gun. She blames the person and the heart behind that gun that pulled that trigger, and a lot of other people. But she called me one day and she said, "Mike, I want to learn how to shoot this gun. I want to be able to defend myself." Okay, great. So
did they make short guns?
Well, I don't know, because she's all but, you know, maybe 4 foot 11.
11? Oh, well, maybe. You're generous.
Yeah, she's maybe 4 foot 11.
No, where she's on a good day. A hard time about that.
I can't wait to show her this. She's gonna love it. But you know, that's what I told her. I was jacking with her about her hands. You know, she's like, got them little baby hands. You know, how do you know? So. Long story short, you know, we went in there, and I think that I like to think that I'm a good instructor because I don't get emotional, you know, and I just talk to people and
in a calm manner
and
educate first before you pick up a gun. There's no reason to touch it. Understand the mechanics.
Yeah, I had her shooting that pistol lights out in less than an hour. Yeah. I mean, she was doing a fantastic job.
Comfortably.
Very comfortably. I'll tell you, I think one of the biggest things is that when people take individuals to learn how to shoot is that you have to crawl before you walk, before you run. Even now, if I haven't shot my pistol in, I don't know, a couple months or something, I go 3 yards. Until I master that 3 yards, and I've shot hundreds of thousands of rounds, but even me being what I would consider someone who professionally has handled a weapon for a job, I start at 3 yards. I build that confidence up. Boom. I get that good, you know, finger trigger pull, you know, that good one piece grip, that lockout. Once I get, you know, maybe 6, 8, 10 rounds good on target where it needs to be, then I'll go out to 5. Then I'll go out to 7. And then usually I stop there, you know, because where I see people make the biggest mistake is they want, I don't know why, but people want to shoot out the 25 yards with a pistol. Great. No problem. If you can do it, good. But if you're trying to learn to be proficient, you can't do that. It's because you're not going to be as effective. It's going to affect your psyche. And once you get in your head, it's hard to break that.
It is.
So I would tell people from day one, if you're learning, even if you're somewhat of a
from
novice,
a defensive standpoint,
yeah, that's right.
That's the range you're going to be dealing
with. That's right. If you're shooting someone at 25 yards or more, it's going to be hell. It's going to be hell to try to articulate that you were in fear of your life, you know. And that's what people don't understand. And so I sit there and I watch these people with the range, and like I said, it's usually a man trying to teach a woman or someone else, and they're pushing it way too far out, yep, and they can't get, you know, effective range on target. I can see the mental breakdown, yep, you know, nonverbal mental breakdown. And I want to help, but I don't.
Yeah.
You know,
in the middle of that.
No, I'm not going to get in the middle of that, you know, but it's just, you know, I've had people ask me all the time, Mike, when are you going to do like training through your company? And we may, it may be something we offer as a side deal, you know, but, I know you don't want me to, but
it'll be real hard when you're running for office.
Well, that's true. But, you know, I just, but it, my point is that Rosie was very confident. I mean, she did great. I mean, she shot so good, man. She walked away and she was like, you know, you're a pretty good instructor. I was like, well, I appreciate it. You know, I've seen both sides of this, how this works.
Right.
It never really works the other way. Sometimes it does. I mean, sometimes, you know, getting a little bit of verbal motivation will get you moving.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, you know, we have a problem in America. We do have a gun problem, and we do have a mental health problem. And I'm not saying we have a gun problem. Like, yes, I'm saying we need to go take guns away from people. I would never, ever, ever say that. Never support that.
Yeah.
But we have to be real with each other.
Yeah.
We have to understand that these weapons that we're putting in the streets are getting in the hands of people who don't need them,
yeah,
who have, through their actions and their words, have exhibited signs that are concerning. And we've got to be better. Yeah. We've got to be better as stewards of the weapons that we possess and that we buy. And we've got to have better processes on how to properly vet these individuals too.
Well, and
I'm not calling for red flag
people,
laws.
People
or anything,
should also, if you have a child in the home and you own weapons, there needs to be training, and
yeah,
you need to keep control of your firearms. All right. At the end of the day.
Yeah.
There are so many amazing products out there today with a single motion that can unlock a firearm, that the whole thing, I won't have time, I won't be able to do whatever. All of those arguments are gone. The technology of quick access firearms,
yeah,
the covert boxes, the way to hide stuff. There are so many solutions today that average Americans can buy,
yeah,
and keep guns out of people's hands.
Yeah. You know what I never understood though? And this happens. I see this all the time. People carrying a firearm, but not one in the chamber.
I don't understand it.
I don't get it. You know,
hold on. Let me draw my weapon and then rack
yeah,
around, right?
I get this question a lot. Hey, do you recommend carrying one in the chamber? Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. That's the purpose.
Yeah.
You can't dictate the time, nor the place or the distance, where you may need to use that. Yeah. You probably are not skilled enough, to be able to pull that weapon, create that distance, rack it, and then put rounds effectively on target. So if you're ever carrying a weapon, you should always carry the weapon with one in the chamber. That's it. There's no debate about this. If you don't feel comfortable carrying a weapon with one in the chamber for self-defense, then you should not be carrying a weapon. Bottom line. So,
well said.
That's my PSA.
It's yeah. You know, it carrying a weapon, having concealed, if you don't do it every day, it is something that you definitely have to know how to handle and how to conceal, right? I'm not a believer in open carry in a lot of ways.
No, not at all.
It's just makes you, you know, target number one.
Oh yeah. You're the first person I'm shooting.
Yeah, and you lose all element of surprise, right? 100%. I want to be the person that doesn't look like your person in there. I want to be the one that that's non-assuming.
Right? Dude, I always refer to this one video of this incident. Unfortunately, I'm not making fun of the guy because he died, but I don't know if it was the White Settlement Church in Texas. Don't hold me to that. I can't remember which one because there's been so many. It was the church shooting. Individual comes in. He obviously is exhibiting unusual signs and symptoms of some type of behavior. They're watching him. And instead of just taking action and removing him from that environment, they want to be open and accepting because they're a church, and they let him remain there even though everyone's suspicion is up. That's a clue. That's what we need to get to in America, is when those people are exhibiting those signs and symptoms, we probably should take some type of action, right? Well, because they're a church, they didn't want to do that. They've got him isolated in a corner until they could no longer isolate him, right? And he kind of realized the gig's up. They're on to me. And
he just didn't realize how many people were on to him.
Yeah. Well, he pulled a shotgun, and I got to give it to the usher. He succumbed to his injury, but the first usher, he goes to draw his weapon. But as a former professional, I could see that there was a training block there. And what the training block was is that the majority of people who carry a weapon, when they train and they shoot, they become proficient on their marksmanship, they're not drawing from their holster, right? So they've completely not got this piece down where they're drawing from that holster and then coming out, right? So in the video, he goes to draw. He grabs his gun, and he's got the drop on the guy, essentially. But he can't get his gun out of the holster because, to me, it's obvious that he's never practiced that. And he died because of that. And then he took a shot with a shotgun, and he immediately dropped, succumbed to his injuries. There's no doubt in my mind it was immediate. And
the congregation opens up from this guy.
So then the usher from the back of the church, who was a former law enforcement officer, who trained drawing from the holster, coming out and putting rounds effectively on target, who was an instructor, LTC instructor, it was clear he knew exactly what he was doing, and he trained the way that he should have trained to be prepared for that day. And that moment came, and that was the difference between
life and death
is how you train, right? And one of our former instructors used to always say this, and this individual is a very high, he's very high up within the Secret Service now. And I saw him here a couple months ago. And in our team, one of the sayings that we used to always say was that, you know, the will to train or I'm sorry, the will to win compares little than the will to train to win. So in those scenarios, what may be the difference between life and death is how much training you put in.
Yep.
And is that training effective training? And so
but that same thing can be applied to all things.
Everything in life, right? And so like I always get the question also is, do you think that we should arm teachers? The answer is unequivocally no.
No.
Absolutely not. Because they do not have, you know, the will to train to win.
Well, it's not even that. They don't have the nurture, right? Like they're nurturers, right? I mean, by all things, that's what you want a teacher to be. That's what they are great
and
at.
We don't need to live in that society where our teachers, you know, listen, I get it, man. You and I have had this. We've exhausted this conversation. You know, I get it. There's some areas in rural East Texas or West Texas or whatever.
Some rural that districts.
They have no other option. I get that.
Yeah.
Totally get that. But just to, you know, let's say, you know, just arming teachers because that's what the school board thinks is going to be the most effective. Mm-hmm. It just like putting an SRO there, just because you have a teacher that's armed, that does not negate the will of the individual who wants to cause harm.
No doubt.
Dude, you and I right now have weapons in our vicinity right now.
Yep.
Okay. If you and I decided that we want to take one of these guns and go to Walmart, or what's tonight, Wednesday night, I'm sure there's some high school sporting event.
Oh, yeah.
And we
volleyball game or something.
And we wanted to cause as much harm on whatever entity it is that we chose, we could do that. That's how delicate this is. And that's what people need to understand that there's, you know.
And I would go further that, you know, with the training that people possess, that there's not a facility that you couldn't get into.
No, man. And
that's,
you know, this is such a delicate thing, this world that we live in. And, you know,
life is precious.
It is, man. And we've got to get better as people at understanding people's pain, people's suffering, what people go through on a day-to-day basis, what causes them to do the things that they do on a day-to-day basis that are, you know, harming other people, or it's self-infliction. Those things may not be apparent to some of the people that are closest in our lives, mm-hmm. our family maybe, but they're apparent to someone, a coworker, a friend.
Yeah.
I'm willing to bet that today's event that happened in Georgia, unfortunate event that happened in Georgia, this 14-year-old kid did not wake up yesterday or the day before, or even Matthew Crooks, who took the shots at former President Trump, that they didn't just wake up that day or within the last 72 hours and decide that this is what they were going to do.
No, there was signs, there was a decline,
always,
there was all of these things.
Always leakage. And that's where we make this difference, Mike. Listen, like I said, we're in the business, right? We make money off of these products or services. But at the end of the day, we have to get to a point where people are making the difference on a day-to-day basis. That is where we stop this. No SRO is going to do it. It's proven.
No.
You know, one of the best responses that I've seen was the Covenant Christian response in Tennessee. Yep. That still took 14 minutes.
Yep.
And that was almost textbook. Tennessee, that officer, that department should be putting on clinics.
And not only the school, the way that they responded, there was someone who met the officers outside, gave directions, gave instructions where it's at, where the nearest door was at. That happened. Arguably, this is one place that technology could have made a difference.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that slowed them down.
Technology and product.
Right.
Film.
Well, film for sure. But like, that would have slowed down. I mean, but there still could have been, you know, fatalities. But when the officers responded, getting access through the facility was a huge challenge, right? And so those are things that where that you talk about what makes a difference. That's time, right? That's buying time. And then that's cutting the time to get the people where you need to go.
Well, and I think, you know, as we wrap up, I mean, listen, we don't have all the answers, but I guarantee you we've got a lot of answers.
It comes back to the common sense model.
Yeah, it does come back to the common sense. I like the common sense model.
Yeah, let's just apply common sense to things.
Right? I'm down with that. And we should get a pulse on that.
Yeah.
Right? We should. But at the end of the day, you know, I think what people need to understand is that collectively what we have is we have solutions, real world solutions. And, you know, if anybody's trying to find out what that looks like, you can reach out to us at info@m6globaldefense.com and
sales@serviceasap.com.
Yeah, sales@serviceasap.com. And so you want some true professionals to come in and build you out a strategic plan based upon the foundational components. Moving into the framework and the finishes, we can do that for you. We can do that customized for you. We're not going to create a rinse, wash, and repeat
work
system. Nope.
Every facility is different.
Yep. And every culture is different. Every client is different. And so that's what we can do for you. So anyhow, appreciate you guys.
Stay safe.
Yep. Stay safe. Keep your head on a swivel. Prepare your family and yourself.